It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. In Pittsburgh, there's no shortage of bars to gather with friends to watch the Steelers play. Turns out, from Syracuse to San Francisco, there's a plethora of Steelers bars nationwide to make any yinzer feel at home. Reporter Lauren Ober looks at this phenomenon where everybody's a Steelers fan.
It's a Sunday afternoon, and I'm at the Poorhouse Bar in Washington, D.C. It's not just a bar, though. It's a Steeler bar, a Pittsburgh Steeler bar. Hanging above the awning at the entrance are four huge flags emblazoned with the Steeler logo. Above the door is a banner that reads, "You're in Steeler country," even though we are deep in the heart of Washington Redskins territory. This is where D.C.'s Pittsburgh faithful come to watch their team. The Poorhouse is one of countless Steeler bars around the country, more than 700 from Anchorage, Alaska to Key West, Florida. The very existence of these bars is a phenomenon unto itself. Go to any city in the U.S. and you will find a Steeler bar. Over the years, I've been to Steeler bars in Syracuse, San Francisco, New York City, Vermont, and here in Washington, D.C.
You can take the person out of Pittsburgh, but you can't take the Pittsburgh out of the person.
That's Nina Rawls. She's president of the D.C. Steeler Nation. She grew up in Pittsburgh and moved to the D.C. area 10 years ago.
I think it's pretty awesome. You walk into a bar, there's terrible towels everywhere. People who don't usually like let their yinzer accents fly, let them out for the games. And there's just this sense of camaraderie that it's just, it makes you feel like you're at home watching the Steelers.
Allow me to translate. Yeah. A terrible towel is the gold rally towel, a talisman of sorts that fans wave to, well, rally the team. A yinzer is a person from Pittsburgh who speaks with the region's distinctive accent. We call it Pittsburghese, and it sounds a little something like this. Yinz going downtown catch a Steeler game na? Which in English means, are you going downtown to watch the football game? In a way, every Steeler bar is like a little Pittsburgh embassy. Cross the threshold, and you're suddenly in the Steel City. Everyone in the bar, decked out in black and gold, is instantly your friend.
The unifying characteristic is that everyone's loud, everyone loves the Steelers, and even if you're a total stranger, you can walk in and have three dozen friends because everyone accepts you with open arms.
That's Mandy Tharp.
My name's Mandy. I'm from Newcastle, Pennsylvania, and I relocated to Arlington, Virginia, but I'm still a Steeler fan.
In the 1970s and early 1980s, Pittsburgh's population experienced a steep decline. The steel mills, which were long the city's bread and butter, were shuttering and jobs were shipped overseas. Many a Pittsburgher had to uproot and move to find work. They settled in places like the D.C. metro area, the Research Triangle in North Carolina, and Florida. As a result, Steeler Nation proliferated. Chuck Finder is a former sports writer who covered the Steelers for 25 years.
You go back to the fall of steel. It's a sociological fallback for a lot of people, that reason. There was a flight from Pittsburgh, and I think that is part of it, but it goes back to the franchise, the iconic nature of the franchise. This is a team that had 40 awful years. They were a sad sack franchise until the Immaculate Reception. So it's been 40 bad years to 40 good years. So you have people who've hopped on the wagon since. You've had other generations and people who've kind of come to the pulpit, come into the tent. It's amazing. It's a passion you don't find anywhere else. A lot of people equate it to a religion, but it goes much deeper than that.
If Pittsburgh football is tantamount to a religion, then these Steeler bars are its disciples' places of worship. They're holy sites. The walls of the Poorhouse are lined with relics. A neon Steeler sign, a photo of legendary Pittsburgh pirate Roberto Clemente, pictures of the city's iconic Three Rivers. On game days, the menu has a decidedly Pittsburgh flair. Polish pierogi, Permanti-style kielbasa subs, or heart attacks on a plate, and some sort of alcoholic beverage called black and gold shooters. And everyone is wearing their Sunday best.
I'm wearing my white Mendenhall Road jersey with my Steeler hat on. My name is Marvin Ransom. I'm originally from Pittsburgh, PA, the east end side of the city. I live in Washington, D.C. I've been in the area for 15 years.
Here we go. Cheer to Steelers, black and gold.
Here we go.
This town of Pittsburgh's heart and soul.
Here we go. the Steeler Nation has the best fans. We are from Pittsburgh, the six-time Super Bowl champ. Here we go.
It's tough to put your finger on the roots of this Steeler passion, especially outside of the city. For me, it's about connection. Connection to the place I was born, to the people I love. There's something special about this city. Maybe it has to do with a common history forged in hot, dirty, dangerous mills. Maybe it has to do with that crazy accent that is so easy to slip into when a Pittsburgher, even a displaced one like me, gets lazy or tired. Maybe it's just because it's home. If you are from Pittsburgh, you most likely feel that gravitational pull. The team is part of your DNA. Again, Ransom.
There's Steeler fans in every city. We breed them by birth. We're everywhere. And we're loyal. There's a tradition in Pittsburgh when babies born, they're born and wrapped around terrible towels. You don't know no other team.
That's true, even when you move far from your home. You can leave Pittsburgh, but the black and gold never leaves you.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and I'm joined now by writer Arthur Remillard, who is an associate professor of religious studies at St. Francis University. He's working on a book about religion and sports and has written a piece called Steelers Nation and the Seriously Religious Side of Football. He's with us by phone. Arthur Remillard, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hello, Paul. Thanks for having me.
And we'd like to hear from you. You can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm. And you can reach us on Twitter at ESSPGH and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Tell us your personal story of devotion to the Steelers. What are the lengths you or someone you know has gone to prove that you are the ultimate Steeler fan? 412-246-2002. Arthur Remillard, can you really say that Steelers fans are as devoted to their team in the same way that people are devoted to their religion?
I really don't know if I could say that, but I can say that the devotion of fans to the Steelers acts in characteristically religious ways.
Such as?
Well, I think that first and foremost, the tone of seriousness that surrounds the Steeler connection to their team and their city, their very sense of place and family, are bound around black and gold. So, you know, you just played that piece and they were talking about how you wrap babies in terrible towels, right? We tend to mark significant moments in our life course doing ritual acts, right? If you come from maybe a Catholic background, what do you do with a child? You baptize the child, right? Well, this is kind of like a baptism into Pittsburgh Nation, isn't it? And it's the same whenever you go. How many funerals have you been to of diehard Steelers fans who have, what, a terrible towel there? At marriages, I see plenty of these pictures of people waving terrible towels. So there's a degree of seriousness with which people take the objects and the ideas and the ethos of the Steelers and really ingrain it into themselves in a kind of religious way.
We've been talking a lot. We're only halfway through the show. If this was a football game, it'd be halftime. And we've heard a lot of references to the terrible towel. You wrote in your piece about the origin of the terrible towel, which, Pittsburgh possesses this icon, which is maybe the most famous icon in the world of sports, the terrible towel. Explain the origin of the terrible towel.
Right. So you have 1975, Myron Cope, who is himself this icon, I think, of Steeler lore.
You might want to explain Myron's background, too, for people that don't know.
Right. So Myron Cope, he's a sports broadcaster.
He did the color commentary on their broadcasts.
Exactly. And they were trying to come up with some sort of gimmick or something to get people invested in this playoff game that they're about to have. And so they came up with this idea. Myron Cope came up with this idea of having of fans bringing this yellow towel or a cloth or something to play the Baltimore Colts. The Colts were then Baltimore's team. And Cope was supposedly kind of wary of this. He didn't think a gimmick like this would work. But that year they win the Super Bowl, and that year, right, you have the terrible towel swirling around. And so this terrible towel, right, this is its kind of myth of origin, right, is connected to a great year, right, a Super Bowl winning year, and then it starts to become this battle flag. And you have people like Roethlisberger and Polamalu and stuff saying that this thing is like this spiritual connection between the crowd and the players, right? Whenever people are up there, they are waving this thing with a seriousness and intensity that they think binds them to the team. And that's another sort of religious characteristic, right? Religious objects, religious symbols, what do they do? What they do is they take individual eyes, right? And they fuse them together into a collective we. And that's the kind of religious work that we see happening in Steelers Nation.
412-246-2002, if you'd like to join our conversation. And Arthur Remillard, author, writer, is our guest. Let's go to the phones. We have Nick from Pittsburgh. Nick, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hello.
Hello, Nick.
And my view on this is it's tribalism. That we evolved in tribes, and so in our culture, it's so large and vast and so diverse, we still need some kind of connection as we were in small groups. And so I think that's what it is. That's my opinion.
Tribalism. What do you think about what Nick is saying, Arthur?
Well, I think he makes a good point that we live in a world, you know, our ordinary existence. In a globalized world is very spread out, and sometimes we need an anchor, something to define ourselves by, something that we can grab hold of and say, that is who I am and that is what I am. And I think that there's probably a good deal of truth to that. I mean, our ordinary existence is ordinary, and we seek enchantment, right? And what a football game does and what a football team does is it gives us mythical figures and acts and superhuman things. I mean, just stop and pause and think to yourself, where other than a football field does that uniform make sense, right? I mean, in your workplace, if somebody walks in with shoulder pads, right, that's going to look kind of funny. And in your workplace, right, if your colleague comes and tackles you, right, they're going to get arrested. On the field of play, whenever somebody gets tackled, we don't do that at all. We stand up and cheer. Right? You become a hero. This liminal zone of the football field has its own rules, and that creates a sense of enchantment, of mythical wonder that we're drawn to and that we, again, form our sense of community and identity around. And in Pittsburgh, that, you know, encompasses all sorts of things, to include the steel history, the blue-collar workforce, and everything that kind of goes with it.
412-246-2002. Let's go to Sean, who is from Denver, but we'll let him in anyway. Sean, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hey, how's it going?
Good,
I'm from Pittsburgh, but I'm in Denver right now. And it's just fascinating what goes on with Steelers fans, and so much so that my partner and I, Josh Miller, are currently writing a book called Always a Home Game, where we're traveling to 100 bars around the country where Steelers fans congregate. And we're out in Denver for the game tonight, and we're going to be in a couple of the bars, which are Pittsburgh Steeler fan hangouts in Denver, Colorado. So they'll have hundreds of fans that show up in NFL markets outside of Pittsburgh just to watch the game and to get together and share that passion.
And Josh Miller is a former Steeler, right? He's the former punter for the Steelers who now does a lot of radio work here in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, as we go in, we're getting celebrity Steeler fans are coming on the road with us, other former players as well as Josh. And the stories that we're hearing are incredible, how people will drive for hours to go to a particular bar so they can watch the game with fellow Pittsburghers. And each one of these locations, they have special menu items. They're trucking in Iron City beer. And there's this whole culture all around the country of Steelers, the passion for their team, and what everyone is doing to just celebrate the tradition that the Rooneys have created.
Well, Arthur, I think, based on what Sean's saying, if you can have a Steeler bar in Denver, you can have one anywhere.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I've lived halfway across the world. I lived in Okinawa, Japan. I lived halfway across the nation, in Kansas City. I lived down in Tallahassee. Everywhere I have lived, there is a Steelers community. There is a Steelers bar. And that speaks to, I think, the strength of this. And, you know, it's an interesting thing when people relocate, from Pittsburgh. They take this with them. I mean, I heard a guy in researching this who talked about how he felt, quote, enslaved by the Steelers. Individually, he had a lot of problems with the teams. He didn't like Roethlisberger. He didn't like the coaches. He didn't like much about it, but he couldn't turn away from it. And again, I think this speaks to the idea that the Steelers are more than a collection of individual players, right? That we, you know, that fans who love them love the idea of the team. And when the individual players falter, as your previous piece indicated, that is unfortunate. That is something to address. But that is by no means a reason to leave the Steelers behind, whether you're living in Virginia or Kansas or Okinawa, Japan.
And to your point, in response to our Twitter question, how far away from Pittsburgh have you seen a Steeler bar or a terrible towel? Well, Biased Girl tweets that Aruba and Mexico is where she has seen Steeler bars and terrible towels. And Selena tweets that Scotland is where, in a pub, she saw terrible towels hanging out of a window, as far away as Scotland. And Ed Morrissey says he saw a man wearing Steeler gear in Rome. So there you have it, all over the world.
And you heard that. I saw a show once with Scott Paulson, right, the local radio guy, mm-hmm. I think, with DVE.
Right.
And he's talking about being in Paris and having a Yinzer come up from behind him, you know, and tracking him down. Hey, it's Scott Paulson, right?
Was it?
Go Steelers in Paris.
We're talking with writer Arthur Remillard, an associate professor of religious studies at St. Francis University. And it wasn't always like this. For the first 40 years of the Steelers franchise, the team rarely, if ever, had a winning record, let alone any substantial success. When did Pittsburgh really fall in love with this team?
Well, I think that you've got to start with the Pittsburgh Steelers kind of myth of origin, which would be the Immaculate Reception, right? This is a fairly unimpressive team until we have this playoff game in 1972 against the Oakland Raiders. There's this deflected pass. There's this miraculous snag that Franco Harris makes. Now, they won the game, but they lost the next week. And then they closed out the 1970s with, you know, their famed four Super Bowls. And I think that when I look at the Immaculate Reception, as I understand it, at the time, I mean, when it happened, it was a big catch, it was a big deal. They gave it this name, the Immaculate Reception, which again sort of gestures toward a very religious, moment in Christian history. I think that at the moment it was a big deal, but it became a bigger deal over time. And that's what our sacred stories do. They grow and they grow and they grow. And the past is incorporated into the present. And then the idea of the catch, this miraculous snag, interrupted Pittsburgh's sense of time so that it's before the Immaculate Conception, after the Immaculate Reception, right? And people start to notice this is the moment of elevation, where the Steelers stopped being this sort of bottom feeder team, and Pittsburgh in general became this, you know, city of champions.
And how would you explain the significance of the two statues side by side at the airport, George
isn't
Washington
that,
and Franco Harris?
Awesome. Father of the American nation, right? Here is a guy who is enshrined in the history of what it means to be an American, and right next to him is Franco Harris, leaning over to catch this ball, father of Steelers Nation, right? And I think that it does signal that when you walk into Pittsburgh, you are defined by a city that sees itself through a lens of Steelers Nation.
Would we see something like this in any other city but Pittsburgh, a sports hero with immortalized in a statue next to a statue of the father of our country?
You know, that's a good question, and I can't answer that, but I do know that sports heroes are enshrined everywhere and through time. I mean, you go back to the ancient Greeks. To be an Olympic champion was to become a god, to become wealthy. You know, the idea of amateurism, that's sort of like a French Enlightenment notion, but really, like the ancient origins of sports was to deify these people, to make them larger than life. But, you know, I mean, geez, you go down south, and you go to Florida, and you'll see a statue of Tim Tebow. You go to Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and you will see a statue of Bear Bryant. I mean, we immortalize sports heroes because, again, on the field of play, they fill this enchanted role of becoming mythic figures, doing superhuman things and interrupting our sense of the ordinary and injecting something sacred.
Writer Arthur Remillard is an associate professor of religious studies at St. Francis University. Arthur Remillard, thank you so much for joining us on Essential Pittsburgh.
Well, thanks for having me. It was great talking with you.
Coming up, the terrible towel comes home, and if you're planning to follow the Steelers to one of their road games, you'll want to hear what travel correspondent Elaine LaBalme has to say. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.